Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
In Columbus, where the Nittany Lion basketball team will take on D'Angelo Russell at Ohio State tonight at 7. Russell is having a great year. He is not only in the running for, obviously, Big Ten Freshman of the Year, which he should win at a walk, but he's also in the running for Big Ten Player of the Year. He and Frank Kaminsky of Wisconsin. Kaminsky will probably get it. But Russell's had a fabulous year, coming off a 23-point, 11-rebound, 11-assist performance, a triple-double at Rutgers. He's got one issue, though, that he needs to overcome, and it's not an easy issue for him to overcome, and that is an issue of cramping up during the course of games. He even cramped up at Rutgers the other day, and it's something they are very concerned about. They have limited his practice time because he cramps up. They have gone to the pickle juice route because he cramps up. And that is something to watch for as they play in this one. It's reminiscent of Kurt Warner. Longtime Penn State football fans will remember Kurt Warner, the issue he had in his junior and senior years, playing at Miami in the heat and humidity. When Penn State was ranked number one and Miami won that game in that rainstorm, 17-14, and Warner cramping up at the goal line trying to score a touchdown. He had to be removed from the game because of that. Then in 1982, Warner's playing a great game at Beaver Stadium against Nebraska, but again had to repeatedly go out because of cramping. And people forget in the national championship game, as brilliant as Kurt Warner was in the fourth quarter, same story, cramping up, and Skeeter Nichols was the unsung hero the way he stepped in and played in the national championship game against Georgia. So we've seen firsthand the cramping issue with a great player as to what can happen. Well, it's happened with D'Angelo Russell, and it's the one thing that's kept him from going off even more during the course of the season. Mark Loving, the second leading scorer for Ohio State, will not play tonight. This will be the third game of a university suspension. They think there is an open possibility for him to play against Michigan State Saturday. If that happens, that means he would be available to play against Penn State when they return to the Jordan Center in a couple of weeks. A couple of other notes for you. We'll get to Jerry Tarkanian passing away. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But another bad day for Little League because they have had to do what we thought they would do, and that is strip Jackie Robinson East, West, Northwest, South, or whatever it is, of their championship because they had players on the team from Peoria, Springfield, Winnipeg, and so forth. So, yeah. Can anybody do anything legitimate these days? What? The whole group of them. I don't care what it is. I realize the kids are doing what they're being told to do, but they know. Okay? They know. I've never met Bobby before, but Bobby's on my team now. Okay, well, they're not dumb. And the adults that run it and changing boundaries and the coach knows it and they try to put together a super team and the whole thing. And the players know it too, the whole group of them. And it's like with the Danny Almonte thing. You don't think the kid doesn't know he's 14? Every kid's trying to figure out how to get to 16 so they can drive. Okay? When you're 12, you're 4 years away. When you're 14, you're 2 years away. You know how old you are because you're closer to driving at the age of 16. Come on. The Philippine Little League team did the same thing. I don't understand what the mentality is here because, no offense, okay, in life, does it matter where you are when you're 12? No. It matters in life where you are when you're 22, 32, 42, 52, 62, 72, when you've got responsibilities. When you've got real challenges in front of you, it doesn't matter if you won a championship at the age of 12. None. Zero. Zip. Zilch. And the more that adults and kids realize that, the better off we're going to be. And that's, you know, this is not Little League Williamsport's fault at all. At all. The problem they have is how vast the Little League system is. When you only have a certain amount of people headquartered in Williamsport, there has to be some trust involved to make sure this happens. And that just, you've got 95 to 98% of the people doing it right. And you've got that 2% out there that just think that this is the be-all, end-all of life, and they've got to win the Little League Championship. Well, it's Little League. And it's not Williamsport's fault. And for 98% of the groups out there, they do it exactly the right way, and it's a real credit to it. But when you've got people like this, and the Bronx group, what they did, and the Philippine group, and what they did, you just sit back and say, really? It's really doing this is worth that much to you? Really? Really? How many scholarships, by the way, did the kids get out of it? Oh, that's right, the 12. They got no scholarships out of it.
Remember the other day when you said that you don't get overly worked up because you don't know you don't know the people. Unfortunately, I'm involved in this deep enough that I do know people that weren't directly involved in this, but who have been a part of the upper echelon and the administration at Little League, and I'm disappointed and concerned about the reputation that Little League gets because of situations like this. That's what bothers me.
No, I think I gave the perspective of it, that it's not their fault. It's too vast for anybody, that there has to be trust involved in this.
But it tarnishes the organization as a whole and everything that it does because of
sure
the fact
does.
That there's leagues like this that all of a sudden can't figure out. Now, I understand there are kids that are on a borderline of one league to another. I can almost understand that in a rural area because I've experienced it. But we're talking about like neighborhoods, basically. I don't understand how you can blur it there. I mean, we're talking about this goes to this street to this street. That's pretty black and white to me.
Well, it is, and they blatantly broke it. And
I mean, if you live near,
interesting is that this is not a story that didn't just creep out last week. It was creeping out there within about 2 or 3 weeks after the thing ended. And that was, again, this is how important it is to you. Look, you got to let kids be kids. If they're really into something and they'd rather just dial in on one thing, that's their choice, and let them dial in on it. Don't force them to dial in on one thing. Most kids want to try multiple things. You know, they want to wrestle. They want to play some basketball. They want to play some football. They want to play some baseball. They want to run some track. Pickup games in the neighborhood are really good things. Really good things. Let them work it out themselves. All this organized stuff, every time I turn around, it's organize this, organize that. You know, traveling teams and teams that are going to play. We're playing in our sixth tournament this summer. Great job taking them and burning them out. They got to start backing off on this stuff. Let kids be kids. I mean, when I was growing up, we did not have it. We had one team that was picked to play in the Little League World Series tournament. One. We had no other tournament teams or anything like that. And guess what? I wasn't picked. You know what I did? We went out, played Sandlot basketball. I was perfectly happy. Didn't bother me. My life was not going to be in baseball. Now it turns out part of my life is announcing baseball, and I'm having a blast as I do it because that's what I do. I mean, that's what I love doing, and that's what you'll find. Okay, if any of those kids on that Little League team gets drafted or whatever, that would be a huge step. Danny Almonte is a perfect example. He did end up drafted and has gone nowhere. Because, again, it's all about, you know, development. How does your body fit? All the, just, it's okay to let kids have fun.
As life, I've always said, weird. You get everybody okay, catches life, up to you eventually.
Right. Yeah, but life gets really serious at 22. Life gets ultra serious at 32 and 42. Okay? You're in the thick of it at 52 thinking about what it could be at 72 or 82. Okay? Thus, when you get to 62, you want to make sure your ducks in a row. Okay? Now we're really talking about the serious stuff in life. Okay? Up to that point, be serious when you have to be serious. Have fun when you want to have fun. You want to play soccer? Fine. You want to, you know, you want to wrestle? Fine. You want to play lacrosse? Great. You want to play basketball? Great. You know, that's why one of the great things I saw in college basketball that wasn't talked enough about was Otto Porter. 2 years ago, he was the first team All-American at Georgetown. He's a first-round pick in the NBA. You know what made him different from everybody else? His father didn't believe in AAU basketball. We still made it. Guy was just really good. Believe me, if you have talent, they will find you. Now, I understand there's a lot of pressure on in college these days. A lot of pressure because college expenses are out of control. There's no question. In fact, today here in Columbus, in fact, there was a press conference yesterday. Governor John Kasich was talking about colleges cutting the fat and that the state government may have to cut back on funds that they send to state universities here in Ohio. And again, it brings up, for example, the cost of going to college. Ohio State, by the way, froze its tuition here last year. But Ohio State did not freeze the housing part of it economically. That's what they decided to do. It costs a lot to go to college. I realize there are pressure on parents sometimes thinking that maybe getting them into a sport is a ticket to maybe getting a scholarship and easing that burden and giving them an opportunity at a college education. I understand that, but I think you can still accomplish that goal by letting kids have fun. And if winning a Little League championship is like the be-all, end-all of your life, you've got no life. I mean, you've got no life. We got to do whatever we can. We're going to be whatever. Take the neighborhood. Have some fun. You get eliminated in the first round, you do. You get lucky, you go all the way through. Great. It's Little League.
There aren't seasons anymore, Steve. There are years. And if you want to specialize in one sport and that's and your son or daughter says, "Listen, this is the sport I really like. I want to do this all the time." Fine. If you have the opportunity to do it, great. Do that. But I agree with you. We've lost the idea of seasons where this is a spring sport, this is a fall sport, this is a winter sport. You know, it's gone because of specialization.
I think if you have a prodigy, Van Cliburn, or maybe, for example, we've watched the great work of Johnny Weir and Tara Lipinski. Well, Tara Lipinski was a figure skating prodigy. She won the Olympic gold medal in Nagano at the age of 15. Now, everybody's around her now tells you, you would never know in a million years she's about as grounded gets and so forth. That's great. So if you have a prodigy that really has a special over-the-top talent, I can understand that. But if you want, we can take the number of prodigies and we can count them on one hand.
The only problem is, the only problem is, Steve, parents have those fogged glasses that see prodigy when it's not there.
Well, there are probably maybe 15 of them in the world. There's a good chance yours isn't one of the 15.
Wait, are you speaking yours is in third person or second person?
I'm mostly talking about your kid. Oh, we'll come back.
Listen, I learned that long ago, my friend.
What was the tip-off?
I don't want to talk about it.
Love.
At Sunbury Motors, their customers have loved their prices for 100 years. But they're going to be crazy in love this month with invoice-less rebates. Yes, February, the month of love, is invoice less rebates on all of our new Kias. How about a 2015 Kia 5 LX for $13,999? Our race-winning 2015 Optimus starting at $18,998. And we can't forget about our SUV lovers. We have 23 2015 Serenos starting at $21,515. And all of our new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf or at sunburymotors.com. SMC, selling more cars and loving our customers for 100 years.
Tax and tags extra. All applicable Kia customer rebates apply. KMF bonus cash and financing to well-qualified customers.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Studios mobile today in Columbus, Ohio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Another Charles Barkley moment on TNT last night inside the NBA. Barkley questioned the use of analytics. He took shots at Rockets GM Daryl Morey. Barkley said that, quote, analytics are crap.
I thought he would say they're terrible.
He said Morey is one of those idiots, and that proponents of analytics are a bunch of guys who, quote, ain't never played the game and they never got the girls in high school.
You always know where you stand with him. He does not hold back, does he?
No, you know, he's really kind of a hard guy to get mad at because he's so honest. He said, Barkley minced no words in his extended reply. Morey, by the way, was disgusted by this, and he wrote on Twitter that Barkley was spewing misinformed, biased vitriol disguised as entertainment. Barkley minced no words. He said, quote, they're the worst team defensively among the teams that are going to make the playoffs. They're awful defensively. Just because you've got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team. You've got good team defense. They're not a good defensive team. They gave up 118 points in a victory over Phoenix. No good team gives up 118 points. I'm not worried about Daryl Morey. He's one of those idiots who believes in analytics. He went out and got James Harden and Dwight Howard, and then he's going to tell me that's analytics? He says, then he went out and he got Trevor Ariza, and then he went out and got Josh Smith. I've always believed that analytics is crap. I never mentioned the Rockets as a legitimate contender because they're not. Listen, I wouldn't know Daryl Morey if he walked into the room right now. Barkley went on to say, analytics don't work at all. It's just some crap that people who are really smart made up to try and get in the game because they don't have any talent. Because they had no talent to be able to play, so smart guys wanted to fit in. So they made up a term called analytics. Well, analytics don't work. What analytics do the Miami Heat have? What analytics do the Chicago Bulls have? What analytics do the Spurs have? They have the best players, coaching staffs who make players better. Like I say, the Rockets stunk for a long time. So they went out and paid James Harden a lot of money. They went out and got Dwight Howard, and they, quote, got better. They had Chandler Parsons. This year they got Ariza. The NBA is all about talent. All these guys who run these organizations who talk about analytics, they all have one thing in common. They're a bunch of guys who, quote, ain't never played the game. They never got the girls in high school, and they just wanted to get in the game.
This has a Saturday Night Live bit coming up. I can see Kenan Thompson having fun with this one.
Charles Barkley, who thinks analytics are
terrible.
Tom McGinnis is the play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia 76ers as we stay with the NBA theme. And Tom, welcome. Tim Frazier playing on a 10-day contract with the Philadelphia 76ers. Question is now after the 10 days will be up February 15th during the All-Star break, which will be on Sunday. So the question is, might he be able to come back or not? Tough call. Your thoughts on what Tim's done?
Well, he really got baptism by fire. I mean, Coach Brown of the Sixers always jokes, you know, shake a hand, get in there. There's no big indoctrination. That's just the way things have been over the last couple of years. And so the first game, he plays 35 minutes and does a really good job in Boston, has, I believe, 11 assists, and didn't score until the very end. And then the next two games, he starts. And those were home games, and one of them was guarding Stephen Curry. So he's averaging around 9 assists per game and logged big minutes. I'm sure his head was swirling a little bit because of getting in there the way he did. And I thought, too, the Sixers, you know, they didn't want to overload him with all this information. Brett Brown wanted them to have fun. And then, you know, then he had to come in with and run the offense, and they were limited a little bit, which was not his fault. So he's been very quick, you know, and with speed, and then he's a very bright kid, very likable guy, and we'll see what happens when we get back to action starting up a week from Friday again.
Yeah, he's on a 10-day contract, and that will run out during the All-Star break. And can you explain how these decisions work? Because they aren't always as simple as people realize.
Well, for starters, they had Larry Drew, and they loved him. He did everything they asked
right.
him. Brett Brown said he could get an A, but like in order after the second 10-day contract expires, so it's not like a player gets waived or anything. It's just you don't at that point you would have to sign him for the rest of the year, and the Sixers weren't in a position to do that just because they wanted some flexibility because the trading deadline is a week from Thursday. So, I mean, this is just totally me speaking. I would be surprised if Tim wasn't re-signed just based on everything I just said, and there aren't any games between, you know, this is the longest break ever in the history of the All-Star break. But, you know, this is somebody they had in the summer. They loved him in the summer league. Brett Brown was really impressed with his interview with him. I mean, at Penn State, he was a double major, one of which was communications, and the other was supply chain, which, believe it or not, is like logistics. And Coach Brown was like, well, what is that? And Tim explained, like, if you had to get, like, a million basketballs from New York to Hong Kong in 10 days, how would you do it? You don't get a whole lot of NBA prospects talking about those types of propositions. So that's just a little bit of the backdrop as far as the decisions. You know, they're getting a look at a lot of young players. That's part of the process here in the last couple of years, and seeing who are what we call keepers in terms of players who might be with the program for the foreseeable future in the years to come. And I think that list is growing with the likes of Jeremy Grant and Jakarr Sampson and KJ McDaniels and Sims and Thompson. Now, granted, you'll have to get a little bit better. Those are players that can be on your team, but they may not be starters and some of your go-to guys, but they're definitely players they've shown to be pretty solid so far.
What I found interesting about the Sixers' time is that when they've drafted, even though they know somebody might be out, they still draft them because I think they see a big picture here. Is that an accurate way of looking at how they're approaching certain things?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you go back to 13, I believe it was, like Nerlens Noel, had he been healthy at Kentucky, probably would have been the number one pick. And right. there's value there, I think, is the way that Sam Hinkie sometimes phrases it. New Orleans was 6. They also got another pick from New Orleans for that, which ended up being the Sarge pick. Dario Sarge is the kid in Europe who's very young, and he's been twice selected the Euro Youth or Young Player of the Year, whatever they call it, which is a pretty high mark. Ricky Rubio got it, and another young player in our league. And then same thing with Embiid. I think it's Embiid was the odds-on consensus to be the number one pick in the NBA, and they're in a position where they can rest and make sure he gets absolutely 100% healthy before playing him. But, you know, he's got, to borrow from the basketball people, great upside potential when, in fact, he gets healthy. So that's what I think it is. It's in an unprecedented position, really, to be patient, the way the Sixers have been with ownership and everything. The fans have been great about it. And, you know, you get a beat and you might have a player that could help your franchise for 10 years. I mean, it's obviously a big if, but that's the kind of talent he might be.
Michael Carter-Williams, a big reason why Tim Frazier has been playing and has started a couple of games because he's been hurt. I think it's a toe injury, if I recall correctly. Is he really a guy that is a centerpiece guy, in your opinion, that you build around with the pieces you just talked about? How do you view Michael Carter-Williams?
I don't know that he's a centerpiece guy. I think he's one of a complement of very good young players. The numbers that he has put up, albeit because of opportunity, are unbelievable. I mean, his rookie year, the numbers go back compared to the likes of Oscar Robertson and Magic Johnson. And this year he's in a grouping like with LeBron James in terms of 15 points, six assists, six or seven rebounds and assists. That part's unbelievable. So, but he clearly needs to get better in his shooting. He clearly needs to get better in terms of handling the ball. But there's growth there. He's a young player. I mean, you think of some of the guys that they're getting into their fourth and fifth years and how good they've become at that point. That's Michael Carter-Williams is still in the process. So he's learning and getting better all the time. And so I don't know that he's the guy, but I think he can be part of a nucleus of players that can make our franchise pretty solid for years to come.
Hey, this may be a difficult question, but I'll go down this road anyway. I watch Yogi Ferrell at Indiana, college player, obviously, and he seems to figure out in the first 10 minutes, what do I need to do? Do I need to be a passer? Do they need to be a shooter tonight, whatever? And a kid, Mello Trimble, down at Maryland, has been in a shooting slump lately, yet against Penn State, he wins the game, Tom. Helps them win because he has 8 assists and 1 turnover on a night where he didn't hit a shot because he said, look, I'm not shooting well, but I can do something else. Is Michael Carter-Williams giving you the impression that he gets a feel for the game as to what needs to be done on a particular night, or is that still part of the growth process for him?
That's a pretty good question because that's what I think of when I think of Michael Jordan, you know, because obviously he could have scored at any point early in the game, but he would get everybody, he'd get Horace involved, he'd get Pippen involved, he'd get Cartwright some looks. I mean, he moved the ball around when he turned it on and won those games for the Bulls so often. It's a great trait to have, you know, and it shows versatility. So Michael does get people involved, and I think maybe it's the flip side of this conversation, and that is we struggle to score. We're like 30th in scoring in the NBA at around 89, 90 points per game. When the best team we just played them, the Warriors, and held them in check to 89, scores 111 points per game. So I think Michael felt, especially with Tony Roten out, that he needed to kind of take on that burden, and that's not really who he is. And he got away from, I think, a little bit early, and the reporters would pose questions to the coach along the lines of, is he taking too many shots? In some games he took like 20 shots, and the coaches worry about quality of shots. So, right. And then he dressed it back in terms of not shooting as much, and he had some of his better games. So I think, you know, the feel part, like, on if you could kind of, in a general way, say he got it wrong, or maybe didn't have the proper feel because he was trying to do too much. And that's a balance for a point guard. You know, I mean, your first job is to find the open man and, you know, see who needs to get the ball at a certain time and run the play and end up, you know, with the ball. But the way that we move the ball, the way the NBA is kind of with the motion offenses, which the Spurs have done, it oftentimes come, you know, our theory is often good to great. And that is, you know, everybody should share the ball until they get the best possible shot. And I think Michael, like everybody, is kind of going through that process to find the right answer each and every possession.
Interesting player on the Sixers, as I watch him, is KJ McDaniels. Tell us a little bit about him. I know he just went through, I mean, you just mentioned the Golden State game. Plus minus can be a tricky analytic, but I know he was a minus 14 in that game on the analytic scale. But tell me a little bit about him and where he can fit if they decide to keep him.
Well, he was an A-plus in the highlights, I think, on that game with the
yeah.
The self alley-oop, if you want to call it, off the glass. So, two things. Like the coach talked about, if he could just guard, which he's shown a propensity to be able to do, and make a shot, which early in the season he was able to do, that right there would be a good rookie season. So his background is that he's from Birmingham, Alabama. He went to Clemson. He led the Clemson Tigers. He was a four-year player in basically every stat last year. One of his number one attributes is he's a shot blocker. And you find that's a rare thing from the wing position. It's almost like Alvin Robertson from years gone by or Michael Jordan. You don't find a guy who's one of the top shot blockers at 6'5", 6'6", and coming from the wing and tracking people down. I mean, that takes unbelievable athleticism and timing and really kind of intuition. So he's actually gone through a little bit of a lull where he was trying to dunk everything or shoot threes. And he's shown, having said that, he's shown an ability to get his mid-range shots. But now there's been a couple, more than a couple. He's gone through 3 weeks or so where these forays to the rim, where it's hard in the NBA. There's somebody there guarding the rim, not to mention your initial defender, the health defender, and then the rim protector, where he's kind of had some bobbles and whatnot. So I think he's kind of going through some things. But this kid, I think, is going to be a tremendous player. I really think he's got a chance because he can, you know, it's a rare thing in the NBA to be able to just take a guy and have him, put him in front of another guy, and he's good. Not saying he's going to shut down a Carmelo or LeBron or some of these unbelievable wing players, but where you have a guy that you don't have to scheme, you can just let him guard, and I think KJ McDaniels has that chance.
Brett Brown really impresses me. You can just see he knows players, he knows the game, he knows where he wants to go with this thing. I think if there's one thing that impressed me more than anything else is that when people were attempting to label the Sixers as let's lose as many games as possible, he got his back up and he bristled at that. Tell me about his personality, but also about this notion that, hey, look, people are tanking and so forth. I mean, there's some professional pride here on the line, isn't there?
Right. I mean, Coach Brown, as he says, you know, and says it often, they coach to win. They go in every game hoping to win. And, you know, it's a transitional period for our franchise where these guys, obviously, it's the youngest team. It's the most free agents any team has ever played before. It's a situation where, you know, they just, right at this stage, you still have these young players. And the number one attribute, maybe, I think that he possesses is that he brings a tremendous attitude every day to be able to keep this locker room together and to have a spirited group the way they are is an amazing thing. And that, I think, is in large part due to him. And it's also because there's young players and they're getting this huge, the best job interview that a young player could have. But you hit it right on the head. He's got it all. He's got the X's and O's. He's got the motivation. He knows the game. It's in his bones. His father was a coach. He's had an unbelievable pedigree in terms of playing for Patino and being with Popovich for over a decade and being a head coach for 17 years in Australia. And we think, oh, that's not our... But no, he ran the show, and he coached the Australian national team in major international competitions like the London Olympics in 2012. So one of the biggest transitions, and Budenholzer's made it, in Atlanta, and has proven to be maybe the coach of the year this year in the NBA, is switching from an assistant coach to a head coaching job. But Brett Brown was already a head coach for years. So more than anybody else, I mean, our fans are right there. I want the Sixers to come through this for him because he deserves it the way he's gone through this, and he's been the face of our franchise for a large extent. He's a tremendous coach. He'll be able to do it when he has some of the best talent in the NBA. He's that good. So, to me, he's a shining star, and it's neat to be able to spend a lot of time around him.
Yeah, I think he's a pro's pro. Hey, love the broadcast. Great job, as always. Thanks a lot for spending a couple of minutes with us today.
You got it. Really appreciate it, guys.
Tom McGinnis, play-by-play voice of the Philadelphia 76ers. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Jackie Robinson, Southwest, West, Northwest, directional, whatever, Little League team that was in the Little League World Series championship game. Had put together an all-star team and essentially, just another day where you just sit back and say to yourself, really? Really? Jerry Tarkanian passed away today at the age of 84. Of course, we talked about Dean Smith earlier in the week, and Dean Smith's legacy is just much, much easier and less complicated to discuss, even though Dean Smith lived in complicated times and coached in complicated times. Being a head coach in the South and North Carolina at the time and having Charlie Scott recruited and play for you, and we'll see Charlie's son Shannon Scott tonight here at Ohio State. Extremely complicated. Dean Smith deliberately going into restaurants with Charlie Scott was
a personal statement, stop us, and people didn't. So, but Jerry Tarkanian, when it comes to the NCAA and how he ran his program, especially at UNLV and, of course, at Fresno State, far more complicated legacy. He won a national championship in 1990 and had that great line, the NCAA is so mad at Kentucky, they put Wichita State on probation.